no offense, to order, I guess if there is such a thing. And I think we'll start just with introductions of the executive board, and we'll hand the mic down to the far end, and we'll work this way.
Dave Hayter, member at large.
John Fernandez, member at large. Ekman Visvanatha Gobe Vish, member at large.
Can you text her?
Chuck Ingram, from Oklahoma.
What are you?
I am Vice President of Finance. Many, many years. Thank you.
I just needed to be reminded.
Yes.
I'm Randy Bauer. I'm the president for a few more hours of U.S. Chess.
Kevin Pryor, Vice President.
Mike Hoffman, Secretary.
Hey, Bartlett, Executive Director.
We're missing Leela.
And we're trying to find Leela. So we got a bunch of people who have text messages headed her way.
So we do want to, you know, keep this moving so you all have a chance for any of the questions that you might want to ask. And then, of course, there is a awards recognition reception at 4 o'clock, and it's at the Riverwalk, right?
Right down the street.
Riverwalk, and Renee says it's right down the hall, so we'll all follow Renee. So the first order of business is if there is the opportunity at this meeting to elect up to an additional 5 delegates. There's not a requirement that we do so. There is a requirement that those who are able to be nominated and then elected have to have been a delegate at one of the annual meetings within the last 5 years. And I see Mike Niekman, who is the chair of the elections committee, and I suspect he has a list.
I have a short list, yes. Per Article 5, Section 9 of the U.S. Chess bylaws, the U.S. Chess membership meeting may elect up to 5 additional delegates for a term that expires on June 1 of the following year at the start of the membership meeting from persons who are present and have previously served as delegates in at least one of the last 5 years. Therefore, be it resolved that the 2024 U.S. Chess membership meeting elect as additional delegates to the 2024 U.S. Chess Delegates Meeting the following: Alan Cantor of Tennessee, Sandra Hoffman of Wisconsin. And that's the end of my list. If there's anyone else that qualifies and desires, please let me know.
Are there others to add to that list again that meet the qualifications? Seeing none, generally we have just done this by acclamation unless there's someone who wishes to have an individual vote on either of those members. By unanimous consent, we accept the nominees as delegates. Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Next order of business would be any motions from the membership meeting, which would then get advanced to the delegates meeting. And my understanding, Mr. Secretary, is that there may be 3 of those?
Yes, there are.
Do you want to, I'll let you do the secretarial duties here.
Here, Mike. Okay. Thank you. Dan, you can bring up the first of those extra motions. Okay, that's good. Okay, this particular motion is suggested from here on the executive board. And this one gets into, we've had in the past, this will be the second year in a row where we've had challenges for state chapters for the same state chapter. And what this motion proposes is to put some control into this process so that when a challenge comes in, it gets reviewed by the executive board, and the executive board can look at it and say, this is substantive, it represents a significant issue that has not been addressed in the past year, and therefore it should be advanced and go to this body of delegates. And if it's not, it would be denied. But in effect, it proposes a 3-year waiting period, or cooling off period, if you will, so that if a challenge comes in, you got to wait 3 years before you can challenge again, unless there is that substantive reason why the challenge should be reheard before before this board of delegates. But that's the gist of this motion. And it would require a change to Article 8, the organizational units, in section one called state chapters of the bylaws.
I would note, too, that with changes that were made last year, any change to the bylaws will require a two-thirds majority vote by the delegates. It looks like Andy...
Actually, this wasn't on the ADM, so it would be three-fourths.
Oh, it's not an ADM. Okay, very good. Good point, Caleb. Thank you. Andy, did you want to... I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question.
This would not be implemented for this upcoming...
That's correct. It would not take effect until the next cycle.
Thank you.
And even if it was in effect for this year, I'm pretty confident the board would have voted that these are substantive issues that need to be addressed.
In the back.
What was the sponsor of
it? Can you speak up?
The executive board. The executive board is.
Any other discussion?
Yes.
Daniel Cerna, New Mexico. Question, why is it EB before states and affiliates? Wouldn't it normally be states and affiliates first as an EB to verify that? Or is there more?
No, because what happens is the office receives the packets from affiliates that want to challenge or to become, for example, in a state that doesn't have a chapter, the packets come to the office. Then the office sends the packets to the executive board so we can take a quick look at them. Then we pass it to the states and affiliates committee and request a review by the states and affiliates committee and a recommendation to come to us by a certain date so that we can meet our bylaws requirement to be able to provide a recommendation to the delegates at least 30 days before the delegates meeting.
So before states and affiliates, it's more of like a quick, is this meeting certain criteria, or are you making an assessment?
It's making an assessment of it at that time to take a look at it. Because let's pretend, for example, that we get something next year, and from the perspective of the executive board, we kind of look at it and say, this doesn't really represent a substantive enough change. We're still going to let the states and affiliates look at it and have them provide us with a recommendation. We're just not going to kill it right there and say that's the end of it.
Okay, so you won't necessarily decline the challenge, but just have your initial assessment.
Not necessarily, but I mean, we have to remember states and affiliates is an executive board appointed committee that is to advise the executive board. So ultimately, that would be up to the executive board.
Yeah, so if they came back, for example, and said, we don't think it's a substantive enough change, then we would probably recommend that this not be on the agenda for the next year.
Okay, that would be quite
Yeah.
Point of information.
State your point.
Why are we mentioning the states and affiliates committee in here? Because the bylaws doesn't create this committee, so it seems kind of weird to mention it there. Why can't the executive board just ask the committee for its opinion, and then the executive board can make the decision?
Because we want to make it clear to the delegates that we're being, that we're providing it to this other committee to take a look at it. That's why.
Okay.
Yes.
Further to that point, the states and affiliates committee is not mentioned in the motion.
Right.
It's only the rationale, isn't
that
right?
Right.
Yeah,
that's
correct.
Right. Okay. Oh, right. I didn't see that. No, I forgot to bring my glasses, so I'm just going to
wait. That's okay, Caleb. That's okay.
It's okay, Caleb. I'm blind, too. Right.
Okay, any other discussion? Then let's put this to a vote. All in favor?
This is just to putting it on the agenda is what we're voting
right.
for.
It's got to go to the delegates, obviously.
Right.
All at the membership meeting, though, members, all those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? Motion carries. And next motion, Mr. Secretary. Yes,
Mr. Chairman, as the co-chair of the Bylaws Committee, I'd like to point out that now that this has been approved here, where it will go in the agenda is at the beginning of new business.
Correct.
That's where this motion will appear on the agenda.
And any other
motions that are passed here,
right.
Yes, sir.
Exactly.
Mike, you want to? Yeah. Okay, go ahead. There you go. Okay, so those of you that have your bylaws in front of you may want to kind of quickly scroll around. But there's a portion, this whole issue, first of all, gets at the age of delegates and alternate delegates, the minimum age requirement for delegates and alternate delegates. It came to our attention a few weeks ago that there was a delegate, at least one, who was not even going to be 16 until the 1st of June. Until the 1st of June. So we went, you know, we saw that this, you know, we saw what was in the bylaws. So we went to, we sought legal counsel, because on the board, our impression was that the way the bylaws read right now is that you got to be 16 years old to be a voting member, and then the next sentence says all delegates and alternate delegates are voting members. Legal counsel advised and said that sentence trumps the age requirement. It does not define the age of a delegate and an alternate delegate. It literally trumps the 16-year-old age requirement. So we said we need to fix that. And the proposed fix is what you see here, which is to take that sentence that says all delegates and alternate delegates are voting members. That's understood because you get elected to this body as a member of the organization. But then to take that age requirement and stipulate it specifically within the bylaws, within Article 5, Section 2, so that the age of delegates at large and delegates shall conform to the specifications for voting members provided in Article 4, Section 2, which would then state that you need to be 16 years old as of the 30th of June, I think is what it says, but that would just move that and designate that age requirement right there.
That's the motion. Is there a discussion?
Plenty of information.
State your point.
So just to clarify, this just is requiring delegates to be 16 to be able to vote in the elections.
No.
To serve as a delegate.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, serve as a delegate. All right. Then. Okay, that was confusing.
Because it's already 16 just to vote in an election.
Okay,
any other questions? Discussion, Ellen.
Just clarification, and in part to answer your question. We thought it was 16 before, and the problem is you've discovered legally it might not be. So this is trying to return to the status quo we thought we had.
Yeah, I would call this cleanup. Okay, hearing no further discussion, we'll put it to a vote. All those in favor of moving this on to the new business agenda at the delegates meeting, opposed? A motion passes. Mike?
The next one, please. Okay. And go ahead. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's my motion. I'll
just take the mic.
Oh, thank you. Over. All right. So, as you're probably aware, I had a larger motion on the agenda to essentially rewrite the Blitz rules, and had a discussion in the rules workshop. I'm planning on asking the delegates to refer that to rules just because it looks like they probably need more time to check them, make sure it's all right, and I'm perfectly fine with that. However, there is this one part of it that it does seem would be good to go ahead and do now, which concerns Blitz appeals in a Blitz just game. And the problem there is that it says the decision of the chief tournament director shall be final. Now, that seems to suggest you cannot appeal to U.S. checks. That does not make sense, and it's not really what was intended. The TD tip tries to suggest that's the case, but that's actually contradicting the rule. So this is just going to clarify that, if a decision goes against you at a Blitz tournament, you can still appeal to U.S. checks, and of course, if it's an assistant TD, you can still appeal to the chief TD. The point, which the purpose of this rule originally was to prevent, you having an appeals committee or special delaying the tournament, which, makes sense, but it's not entirely clear. The scope of it is much broader than that. This is just going to clarify that it's only going to be limited to that.
Thank you, Caleb. Any discussion? Yes, Bob.
I just want to support the motion because this text does conform to current practice. I mean, even though the rule is written one way, it's absolutely clear.
Okay. Committees. Seeing no further discussion, we'll put it to vote. All those in favor of moving this to the new business agenda for the delegates, raise your hand. Opposed? Motion carries. Are there any other motions from the floor?
Dan, are there any other motions? No other motions,
no,
Mr. President.
Excuse me, Mr. Secretary. I submitted a motion to you.
Okay. Okay, so the motion from Hal Terry is the members recommend that ADM 2429, which is the safe play training motion provided by Hal Terry, be brought up for consideration as early as possible under new business.
That's a recommendation?
Yeah.
Right. The substance of the motion, that's a question for the delegates meeting. This is only...
So you're recommending that I move it on?
It should be discussed as soon as possible.
Okay.
All right. Point of information.
State your point.
Why can't the delegate behind me just make a motion to amend the agenda when it gets to that point tomorrow? I don't see the point of doing this. This just seems like it's wasting our time here. We can just have a motion to amend the agenda later, and if the delegates feel that's appropriate, then we can just go ahead and do that. And we can put that wherever in the agenda that makes sense.
And how long would we take to discuss that on the delegates' floor?
A while.
Should we take a while to discuss it here?
At least this isn't during the finite time that we have for the delegates.
So just to speak against the idea of trying to move this up on the agenda early, we have a complicated agenda. We have a complicated agenda that includes all sorts of things, including appeals of decisions, all of which the experience of dealing with all of those things is very likely to heavily influence the views of delegates towards this motion, and we should not try to rush to judgment on this motion without the delegates being fully informed of the impact of its suggestion.
Andy,
yes.
Speak up,
Caleb's
please.
To address Caleb's point, this is a motion from the membership meeting as opposed to just something that's ordinary happening in the ordinary early of the delegates meeting. So Caleb was asking, if I'm not mistaken, why can't we wait until tomorrow to address that? But this is a motion that's coming from the membership meeting specifically.
Point of information?
State your point.
May I inquire of the members of the secretary exactly which motions she thinks are the ones that are involved and need to be decided first?
We have not only motions, but we have appeals of safe play decisions. And the order in which the entire agenda runs is something that the delegates will want to be able to consider carefully without trying to rush something to judgment that frankly would deprive the delegates of the ability to assess the entirety of the things that are going to happen on the agenda before making this decision.
I think the appeals are after new business.
I say I must respectfully disagree with that opinion, but that's allowed.
Of course.
I may have missed it if you said the rationale to move this up. I apologize. Yeah. I may have missed it if you said your rationale. I was listening to the motion. I didn't hear the rationale. Could you explain the rationale for moving it to the front of the line?
It's an important question. And there's a lot of interest on both sides, and I think it should be moved to an earlier point in the meeting rather than all the way at the end. And I don't see how it would affect any other motion.
Danny?
I think that every motion put together by an ADM is equally substantive. So therefore, whatever is listed currently, the reasons that are there, not be sitting here in the membership meeting, or the delegates can agree to move, or the president can agree to move it up later as we approach the delegates meeting.
Yeah, I mean, if you think, I tend to agree, if you think about this, Hal, this is now a motion that would be then debated by the delegates, and it would go in new business at third in order. So it's not going to come. It can't come earlier in the agenda the way you're doing it.
No, the motion only says as early as possible. No, I just it's not meeting. Possible we didn't have for any to go in-person ahead meeting this year.
Okay,
that's what I want.
All right. Okay.
Everyone else got an in-person meeting.
All right. Well, any other further, Alan?
I object many to moving people. This up because I have other motions that I think are just as important as this one that would then be superseded. Besides, at the proper, if you want to change the advance agenda. The proper way to do that is when the advance agenda is being approved. If you think we ought to change the advance agenda, motion at that time during the meeting tomorrow for the delegates to change the agenda. Those are the people who can change the agenda, not this meeting.
Yes.
So I have to disagree with that. One of our rules allows you, if you have a motion, to bring it to this body, that passed by this body, it moves to the front of the agenda. If you think your motion is an important enough one, you can bring it to this body. If this body agrees, it's moved to the front of the agenda, that is allowed.
It's
a recommendation, but
go ahead.
The motion that was just made on the floor was not to restate this motion of Hal's and make it a motion of this one, of this body. That's not what he said. What his motion was to encourage the delegates to move it. So the proper way to do that is when it comes up in the advance agenda discussion tomorrow, because we will vote as delegates, those of us who are delegates will vote to approve the advance agenda or not. If you don't like the order of the advance agenda, then the time to get the advance agenda changed is then.
You can get it changed.
Only if you say, I'm going to present this motion as a motion from here, and that's not the motion that's on the floor.
Okay.
You're debating a motion that's not been made.
I understand completely.
Okay, thank you. Any other, we're beating this to death. Go ahead.
Well, technically, you could also vote to suspend the rules, too, during the meeting.
That's correct. You could.
I called the question.
I bless you. Is there objection? Hearing none, we're going to put this to a vote. All those in favor of
restate
the question,
the motion for the membership meeting. The members recommend that ADM 2429, which is the Safe Play training motion, be brought up for consideration as early as possible under new business.
Thank you.
Okay, you've heard the motion. All those in favor of the motion, raise your hand. Those opposed, motion fails. Okay, that...
There's one more.
Oh, great.
So, y'all, the rest of y'all start writing. I mean, we got plenty of time. Come on. Okay, so this motion comes from Steve Emmett in New York. It says, notwithstanding any scheduled online workshops... Dan, I'll give you a copy of this in a minute. The membership is in support of having an in-person rules committee workshop during the normal period of workshops preceding the annual delegates meeting. And I asked Steve, are you talking about this year? He said, no. He said, for the future. So I'm gonna pass this paper to Dan now.
Steve, did you want to speak to your motion?
Yeah, the delegates are the body that's charged with the rule, is the ultimate authority of the rules, and we didn't have an in-person workshop, we had an online workshop, but we usually have an in-person workshop, and the value of having an additional in-person workshop is you can refine ADMs, you can reconsider them, you can withdraw them, and you can see how they will float at an in-person workshop, and I think that's an important part of the workshops, and to not have it kind of maybe deprives an opportunity to review ADMs that might be considered, even to have new ones addressed, you know, at the meeting, which can be, the new ADMs can come as new business right from the workshop. So we didn't have that opportunity.
Thank you, Steve. Caleb?
So I would have to agree with this. So there are some workshops that we are going to have to move online just because we are going to have to condense the schedule because we're going to have two rounds on Wednesday starting next year. Okay. So, but rules is one that it is useful to have. In-person meetings generally are a lot more effective in getting things accomplished than online meetings. And rules workshops are not just information. We're actually dealing with motions, we're discussing, and there's changes that can come up from that. There's ideas that come from that. So it's useful to have that in person. And I was at the rules workshop last year, I was at the online one this year, and I felt like the in-person one, you know, last year was better, right? So I would strongly encourage that we go ahead and approve this.
Danny.
There are some committees, Scholastic is one of them, we host Zoom online and in person. One of the reasons is we get different forms of feedback and different kinds. context of the types of meetings. The Zoom one is mostly so that people all around the country can follow along, see the committee meetings, see the work Scholastic Committee has to do, specifically with the Scholastic regulations, which come up during this time of year. The Rules Committee is another one that has a general consensus to be voted on the delegates with a large approval rate to change a rule at 85% to do it in one meeting. So finding which committees might need both an online and in-person is important, just like finding which ones only need in-person and only conducted on Zoom. And finding a nice balance between which committees need what is what I think this motion, really the ultimate intention of why Steve is presenting this. So I think that that's the project here, is to figure out which committees should be involved in such a thing.
Should be scheduled instead of scheduled.
Yeah, we're gonna have to map out with Renee and with assistance from the U.S. Open Committee, just map out the whole schedule of the activities that are occurring, so we can lay out which and where, which committee meetings are gonna need to occur where in that whole schedule, so that we have that, you know, in hand.
Just as a follow up, Rose did an absolutely outstanding job this year of providing a Google sheet of which committees in person were going to schedule at one time. That was new this year, and she deserves full credit for that. Because put these stuff together for the governance point of view, and it's going to be even harder under the new U.S. Open next year. So, thank you.
Fun.
Mr. President, I call the question.
Question's been called. Is there objection? Hearing none, we'll put this to a vote. All those in favor of moving this to the new business part of the delegates' agenda, raise your hand. Opposed? Motion passes.
Point of order?
Yes. State your point.
This doesn't ask the delegates to do anything. Why is this going on with the delegates' meeting? Because it doesn't ask the delegates to do anything.
Well, we've already passed it.
But that's not what it was at. This motion just says this is a sense of this meeting. So it doesn't have a question addressed to the delegates to do anything.
Well, it's been, you can raise that point of order when it comes up.
Okay, I'll move on.
It's been passed.
Because it's not asking.
Okay, I hear you.
Point of order is out of order.
Okay, so now's the time when we'll entertain questions or comments from those that are here at the NOSHA meeting. Then after that, I have one other thing I want to bring up before you all.
Randy, there's one piece of information I'd like to share first. I and a few other people were a little bit late getting here today, and it's because we were COVID testing, because we found out that someone who played earlier in the week and was in attendance, at least at the Women's Committee workshop yesterday, has tested positive for COVID. I shared that as a piece of information in case you've been exposed or are concerned about testing or masking.
I got my shots.
Thank you, Leela. Any comments or questions from the membership? Hold on, Dan.
Right, could we ask that if people have motions to submit tomorrow, that they email them, because we have good internet in this room, and it will save a lot of time if I can just do a copy-paste instead of typing up people's written items.
So Dan would like you to email any motions or amendments, and is there an email address?
dlucas@uschest.org.
You can send them to either Dan or Rose, right?
Or
maybe governance@uschest.org. Maybe we can just put those up on the board.
Dan, reading's handwriting scrawl during the meeting is what you're going to miss most when you leave this job.
Mike?
So I had a question. There was a motion that the board passed earlier this year to create, I think it was a task force, look into the membership ID issues that have been going on for the last year.
The duplicate IDs,
the not a member, and I never saw any report from that. I'm wondering if someone could elaborate on the results of that task force, if it's still ongoing or whatnot. I appreciate it.
Sure. We formed the task force, but we were working with Emmanuel and an outside firm to improve that issue. And I believe that, and Emmanuel, if I'm not describing this correctly, the firm that we were working with to work on that, we're now switching gears and going in a different direction. so that the issue with the task force, that it's delayed, but we are still focused on.
And so we still have problems.
Yes, yeah. I don't think we've solved all of them.
We definitely still have problems. Because I see them every tournament I run.
I send the emails.
Caleb?
I have two unrelated questions. One, I was wondering, maybe Rose and else, but how many delegates have registered their attempt saying they're going to be here? And then second, I know I was asking yesterday about one of the appeals, but I'm on the safe play appeal, but then we also have this rules appeal. So I'm wondering what's the procedure of the Becker appeal, you know, if you may explain how that's going to be done.
It's ordained, right?
At this point, the Becker appeal is going to be in the open meeting. There's nothing confidential about that. We have a packet for you that I think we can check out when you check in. That at this point, we have not been able to confirm that he's attending. We have tried to reach out to him. It may be that he will not show up. And so you will just read the packet and then we'll vote. That one does not require extraordinary procedures like the safe play appeal.
Seeing no other questions, I want to take a minute. I think most of you probably know that Dan Lucas is going to be leaving us for greener pastures. You know, he's been the senior director of strategic communications. I joined the executive board in 2004. There was no way to know just how important Dan Lucas would be to the growth and success of US Chess when he was hired as director of publications the next year in 2005. He came to us after an award-winning stint as editor of the Georgia Chess News. It was clear that Dan could handle the technical parts of his job. He served as Chess Life editor from 2005 through 2018. His tenure is the second longest in our history, with only Bert Hotberg serving more time in that role. But Dan has a really skillful way of managing others, and he is a steady person. He's got a great demeanor, and I think that has really cemented his legacy within the organization. Those of us who have worked with him just think he's just a really great guy. So he led a thorough revamp of our publications, brought them into the 21st century, kicking and screaming. And he oversaw our first steps into digital media with Chess Life Online, our social media channels, and YouTube, where there's a lot of really good content if any of you have not perused that. He was then promoted to Senior Director of Strategic Communications in 2018. He helped successfully guide the organization through COVID-19. And you know, we've had record-setting growth in membership in recent years, and I think Dan has been really a critical part of that. And, you know, the other thing is that Dan has been really good at developing the other staff that work for him, under him, the, you know, junior staff. He really cares about the organization, cares about the people that he works with. And so that's why I'm pretty confident that the organization is going to continue to do well without him, although we wish we weren't doing it without him. And, you know, that kind of prepare the organization for when you leave is really, I think, the mark of an effective leader. And I consider Dan a great friend, both to me and to US Chess. And I think that US Chess owes Dan a tremendous debt of gratitude for his service to the organization for nearly two decades. So thank you, Dan. Very best wishes from me and from all of us at US Chess.
Well, thank you, Randy. That was unexpected and much appreciated. Thank you very much. So US Chess has been terribly important to me in my life. My identity has been very wrapped up in being an employee of US Chess. I'm very grateful to this organization for having given me an almost two-decade-long career in chess journalism. Who would have thought that someone who grew up in kind of a chess wasteland, you know, almost 1,000 miles away from the headquarters of U.S. Chess, could end up having a career in U.S. Chess? And this organization made that possible for me. And again, I'm grateful. I will miss the colleagues I made. I will miss getting to know better some of my newer colleagues. And so, again, thank you, everybody, for the support you've given me over the years. It's been a good ride, but it's time to move on. Thank you.
It's always good to end on a high note, right? So I see no further business in front of the body. I guess we have to entertain a motion to adjourn. Does somebody want to adjourn this meeting?
I move to adjourn.
So moved and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, we are adjourned.